Now, Grainne Mhaill, Grace O'Malley, one of Ireland's most powerful women. She was largely airbrushed from history. Known as the Pirate Queen, feminist chieftain, shrewd politician. There was a celebration of her and the family name on Achill Island over the weekend. And the world expert on Grace O'Malley is sitting in front of me, Anne Chambers. Well, you are the world expert.
Well, no, that's some reputation to have to live up to, Ray.
Well, you've written the definitive biography of Grace O'Malley.
I have, and I've been with an amazing woman on an amazing journey for the last 40 years.
Yes. When did you publish it first?
Well, now, the first edition came out about 1980, and I was working full-time in the Central Bank at that time, 1980. Yes, and it has never been out of print since. It's an amazing, I suppose, recognition of what this woman was all about. And as you said so correctly, she had been airbrushed from our national history. And it was lovely to restore her and to see that the journey continues after all that these years.
So you did a biography on her, which is our main topic of conversation today. But you also did a biography of T.J. Whittaker. And I say that because without him, you wouldn't have written the book on Grace O'Malley.
So right. It seemed writing Ken Whittaker's biography kind of coming towards the end, hopefully not of my own voyage, but Ken Whittaker, as my boss in the Central Bank way back, expressed an interest that I should go and try and find the real story of Grace O'Malley. Now, for a 23-year-old at the time when discos and boyfriends and tennis were priority, but you daren't say no to a governor and certainly not somebody with the status of Ken Whittaker. And I set off and the journey took me 4 years, gave up all my holidays. I left the bank, I remember, at 5 o'clock, and I was over in the National Library. All my holidays were spent in London archives, and then I got access to some private collections of artefacts and manuscripts. And over the 4 years, I put it together, and Ken Whittaker launched the first edition in Westport House, in the home of Grace O'Malley's 13th great-grandson in descent.
Now, and as you say, you've lived with her before the publication and since the publication. Why do you think she hadn't been written about before?
Well, I think Grace O'Malley was airbrushed, and certainly her time, that very, very difficult time before and after, the decades before and after Kinsale, there's no ideology to follow there. There's no flag. There's no Ireland to fight for. It was all about one thing every human being on this planet can understand, and that was survival. As the Tudor conquest of Ireland took momentum in the latter decades of the 16th century. You're talking about what you're seeing today in other countries like Ukraine and Palestine and places like that. You know, a more powerful neighbour is taking you over. So the compromises you had to make in order to survive, in order to protect your, in Grace O'Malley's way, to protect her family, her 200 followers and neighbouring clans who lost their own chieftains, you had to compromise was all the game. So a nationalistic icon was what later generations of historians wanted to portray, and Grace O'Malley simply did not fit that picture.
Aha. And how did she become a chieftain in a male-dominated position?
Well, you weren't allowed to become a chief. Now, the Brehon Law, which operated in the Gaelic Ireland during Grace O'Malley's time, was very liberal to women. You know, women could own their own property. Grace O'Malley, for example, inherited land from her own mother, Margaret, and kept it during her lifetime. Divorce was part and parcel of Brehon Law, and Grace O'Malley availed of that with her second husband. And it was very liberal towards women. But one thing they couldn't become was a chieftain. But Grace O'Malley, by being powerful, by being this pragmatic person, a powerful leader by land and sea. Now, it's very easy to say that Grace O'Malley was the pirate queen. She went to sea. But what did that mean in the 1600s? But don't forget, the sea was in Grace O'Malley's DNA. If she had been a male O'Flaherty, I wouldn't be here today talking to you about her. She'd have been just another O'Malley doing what came naturally. The tradition of the seafaring in Ireland was very limited. Although we are an island, the O'Malleys were the big exception to that.
Where were they based?
They were based basically around Clue Bay, Clare Island and other islands in the area. And they were very, very independent to the very end because of the sea. There were also, I often say, you know, Grace O'Malley, how did you get to Queen Elizabeth? All of these things. The sea was what we would refer today as the tech highway of news and information. And we forget that Grace O'Malley was clued into things that were happening in the wider world outside Ireland at the time. Her father, for example, I found, issued licenses to Spanish, French and English fishermen to fish what was his rich sea domain off the west coast of Ireland. It was very, very well endowed with herring particularly, which was a great export for Ireland and indeed for the O'Malleys. Now, the O'Malleys were a trading, but they traded by sea. They also were, of course, the great importer of the galloglass. These were the mercenary soldiers who fought for the Gaelic chieftains who were constantly warring between one another.
They were mercenaries, were they? Yeah.
They were the galloglass from Scotland.
They brought them in their boats?
They brought them in their ships. They fought.
They imported them.
And they brought them back at the end of the fighting season, basically.
Right.
So that was
fascinating. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
So she became the boss woman. She had 200 people followers.
Yes.
How many ships would she have had, or galleys?
There's a description of Grace O'Malley given by the great Sir Henry Sidney, the English Lord Deputy of Ireland, who met her in Galway in 1577. And if you listen to the words, "There came to me a most famous feminine sea captain called Gracie O'Malley, with 3 galleys and 200 fighting men. She was known for her stoutness of courage and person." I wonder, was she putting on a little bit of weight in middle life? And then he adds, "She brought with her her husband, for she was as well by land as by sea, well more than Mrs. Mate with him, who wore the trousers in that marriage."
Yes.
And then he adds at the end, "This was the most notorious woman in all the coasts of Ireland." That was the very first description that I found in the English state papers of Grace O'Malley when I started.
And the exciting thing for you was that some of the papers that you encountered in your research, you were opening them for the first time.
Since their authors put quill to parchment nearly 500 years ago, and that was in Westport House. They had kept a lot of the family over the centuries. And I can remember, Jeremy, opening one of the iron boxes with a crowbar to get it open. And these documents falling out, telling me more information about Grace O'Malley, and particularly about her son, Lord Mayo, whose biography I wrote, not because he had a famous mother, but because he played a unique role between before and after Kinsale. And his history really is the history of all the minor chieftains that we don't hear a lot about.
So fact and fiction, myth and historical fact. And there's a lot of mix up there, isn't there? I remember being on Clare Island years ago and there was a festival on. It could have been, you know, something to do with Grace O'Malley. But the description was of this woman who was cutting people's heads off as they tried to get off ships and get onto the island.
No. Piracy kept Grace O'Malley's name alive. Well, one have to say that. And I also have to acknowledge folklore. Folklore kept her memory alive. You know, I, as a child going on my holidays to Clubay, heard all the folklore tales
and
about
Grace O'Malley.
And what
were they? Just give us an example of what.
Well, you know, as you say, that she was this bald-headed she-devil, really, that went around knocking people's heads off, you know, and that she, she had this huge army and this huge flotilla of boats. She didn't. She had 3, but she had an army of 200 men. The English army in Ireland at the time was no more than 600, so it's not a bad amount. And I heard all these. And yet when I went to school, she never appeared in my school history books. So that was really what encouraged me to see that she really exists.
Well, it was partly because history was written by men, was that?
That was another thing. But I think the chauvinistic attitude to women in the past, there was even more to Grace O'Malley because she didn't fit that notion of the patriotic figure of Irish resistance.
You mentioned already her meeting with the Queen. Mm. And that came about because her son was imprisoned. Mm-hmm. In Athlone prison.
Yes. Well, you see, the Grace O'Malley, the mother, was, as a biographer, that was very interesting to me. You know, she had 4 children. And the first, the one that she went to save to the court of England, he'd been born aboard her ship. And another son, she talks herself, she's left.
Isn't that amazing, though, to think? She's heavily pregnant.
Goes
to sea.
Absolutely. But she could have been held up in a cam or whatever time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Algerian pirates then attacked her boat after the birth. And they talk about, you know, Grace O'Malley coming up and shooting a gun, which was a very new invention at that time. And the Algerians really ran scared of her. and she came back safely to her castle in Rockfleet. But her other son, as a mother, she talks about counting 12 deadly wounds on his body, because the greatest enemy she had was the governor of Connacht, Sir Richard Bingham. And he really took a huge dislike every way to Grace O'Malley. The idea of this woman, powerful by land and sea, he couldn't cope with it at all, as well as being the fact that she was Irish. And it was when Richard Bingham took her young son, this son that was born at ship, Tibbet Nalong, Toby off the ships, because he took over the business when she got too old to do it. And that's the reason she went to Queen Elizabeth. You know, there was a load of fiction about that. You know, I'm the Queen of Connacht and I'm banging on the door of Greenwich and I demand to see the Queen of England. Imagine trying to see the King of England today, what you would have to go through.
Yeah.
She had to go through the same. And I found this extraordinary document down... written by the Earl of Ormond, Black Tom, in from Kilkenny Castle and Carrigan, the lovely manor house of Carrigan Shore, which he built. And I found a letter of introduction to the English court. And why he gave it to her? Because he was related to Queen Elizabeth through Anne Boleyn. And anybody who was related to her mother always got a little bit of extra at the court. And the fact that he was good looking helped as well, right. I suppose, at the time. And Grace O'Malley goes down to Black Tom. She gets this letter of introduction to Lord Burghley, who was William Cecil, Queen Elizabeth's well-known Secretary of State. And I found the letter. Indeed, I gave a copy to Carrigan Shore to put up on the wall there a few years ago. And with this letter of protection, Grace O'Malley goes to court and she hangs around London for about all of the summer in 1593. And a highlight of my research was finding the letter from Queen Elizabeth talking about their meeting. They met as elderly, experienced women. I'm sad to say that 63 in the 16th century was like 93 today, unfortunately, I have to say that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the letter was, "Have pity," says Elizabeth. Elizabeth in the letter, "for this poor aged woman who comes before me." They were the same age, so there was a little bit of sisterly competition, I think, there. There was only a difference between them, a layer of makeup on the part of Elizabeth. She orders Bingham to release her son, restore him to her lands, and tells Bingham to back off Grace O'Malley and let her free, as Elizabeth says, to fight with our quarrel with all the world. But what Grace O'Malley did after that was just go back to what she'd been doing, trading, doing a little bit of piracy and plunder.
Yeah, the piracy and plunder part of it. So would she have killed people?
Yes, she did. We know she attacked her own son, who sided with Bingham against her. And this was Murrick O'Flaherty in Bunowen Castle out in Connemara. That was the son of her first marriage to O'Flaherty. And when she heard that Murrick had sided with Bingham and that her eldest son had been killed by Bingham, she talks, Queen Elizabeth talks about this in the letter. She got her ships together, sailed over to Connemara, attacked his castle, killed three or four of his men who offered to make resistance, and took his cattle herd as punishment, some mother, some chastisement.
Didn't get to him, though.
But you didn't hear much from about him since.
Now, the exciting thing is, although this your biography is what, how many, how many years old?
80.
45 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had offers over the years, people coming to you, optioning it to make a movie out of it. And you've said what?
No.
Why? So?
Because they wanted pirates. Most of them wanted Pirates of the Caribbean transferred to the Atlantic Ocean.
Scarlett Johansson.
Absolutely. I'm not into that. I want to do justice to Grace O'Malley. So when Kirsten Sheridan and Wild Atlantic Films came to me and wanted to do, indeed, remember Kirsten came with my book well thumbed.
Yes.
So she seemed to want to do what I wanted to do. And it's the woman behind the Pirate Queen.
But even giving birth on board.
Absolutely.
You know.
Going to Queen Elizabeth to get her son.
Yes.
You know, every mother
in
the...
You can see it on the big screen, can't you?
And every mother can identify with that. You'd, you know, and father too. You'd put your head into the lion's den to save the life of your son. And that's what Grace O'Malley did.
And she was still active into her 60s, well into...
I always say Grace O'Malley is an iconic example of positive ageing. I have to say that. Because the last entry in the estate papers I found of her was at the, sorry again, but the great age of 67, where she's reported to have been leading an attack on MacNeil, Rory MacNeil, the chieftain of the island of Barra off the coast of Scotland.
Right.
Now, how about that?
Yeah.
And she married twice, and in between her two marriages, she had an affair. Well, it wasn't an affair because she wasn't married.
Exactly.
With a Spanish sailor.
Well, it was with Hugh de Lacy, who was shipwrecked off the coast of Achill, and she was supposed to have rescued him, and they became lovers. And he was killed while out deer hunting with her in North Mayo. And when she found out who had killed him, they had come on a pilgrimage to the lovely island of Cahir, which is off. It's a pilgrimage island off in Clew Bay, off the Clare Island. Mm. And she waited for them to go. And she took the men who had been responsible for her lover's death and had them killed.
Right.
So now be careful where
you wouldn't mess with Grace O'Malley.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah. So I was saying the O'Malley clan gathered on Achill Island over the weekend, as they do annually, is it? And they're desperately trying to make a direct genetic connection between themselves and Grace O'Malley. How are they doing that?
Well, they have a DNA project. The O'Malley clan have been meeting since 1952. I brought 200 of them now on a tour of her castle at Rockfleet and down to Achill at the weekend. And it's an amazing thing that rally has continued. And I noticed this year there were so many young people as well. Now, people came from all over the world. So this DNA project is worldwide, and people are connecting with the O'Malley clan, not just with Grace O'Malley, but as I told them, she was married twice to O'Flaherty and to a Burke. So also in these lines, you would have direct descendants of Grace O'Malley.
Uh-huh. And they're doing it through the Y chromosome. It's easier to track it there.
That's what they tell me, yes.
To the male line.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Well, with no O'Malley blood at all in my veins, so I'm not eligible, but they did adopt me into their clan.
Well yeah. Look, come on, you're the world expert. No, but you are. That's been fascinating. Now we all know a lot more about Grace O'Malley than we did 20 minutes ago. Anne Chambers, thanks so much, and good luck with the movie. Will you be a consultant? Of course you will. You'll be a consultant.
Well, I've written a script for it.
Oh, brilliant.
So I'm sure it'll go through a few little...
Yes. These things take time.
...drafts since then. But it'll be lovely to be involved, and we'll try and keep it true now to the story of Grace O'Malley.
Brilliant. Anne Chambers, thank you so much. And it's still in print, Grace O'Malley, and your other biography of T.K. Whitaker, Ken, as you refer to him, is also there. I have it on my bedside thing, and I have it there for a couple of years, but I'm going to read it.
Well, I hope he inspires. He's very relevant today.
Yeah, thanks very much, Anne. Thank you. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.